This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, September 4th, 2012. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for KUAF comes from the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Fayetteville, a home for liberal religion where all are welcome and all beliefs are respected. Located at 901 West Cleveland in Fayetteville, with services at 11 a.m. each Sunday and spiritual education at 10 a.m. Think Tank takes place on the first and third Wednesdays of the month. More information available at FayettevilleUnitarian.org.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large, the Ozark dialect. It's been parodied, lampooned, embraced, and studied. Now it may be disappearing. Jacqueline Froelich has that report in about 6 minutes.
And Roby Brock sits down with political analyst Steve Bronner to discuss how few undecided voters there appear to be, with still 2 months to go before the election. They'll also examine the potential casino amendments that still might be on the November ballot in Arkansas.
But first, the National Register of Historic Places may soon include more buildings that are located in downtown Rogers. Buildings within two separate half blocks in the downtown area are being considered for addition to the register. Those areas include buildings on the west side of First Street between Walnut and Elm, and on the west side of Second Street between Walnut and Elm. Carrie Jensen, executive director of Main Street Rogers, says that listing the buildings on the register could help those buildings' owners with renovation efforts.
Most of the buildings in that area, or the majority, which are contributing buildings. And so by listing them on there, then the owners of those buildings, should they at some time decide to renovate the buildings, and most of them are in good shape, but if they want to do an interior renovation or anything like that, they would be automatically eligible for tax credits.
After being listed on the register, the next step on the road to receiving the tax credit would be one of documentation.
Basically, before you pound a nail or even take a hammer in the building, you need to document its present condition with photographs. And then you can take the step of showing what you're going to do with it. And that has to be approved that you are restoring it to its historic look. And that's your step two before you can proceed to get those tax credits.
Two buildings in the area on Second Street that are already included on the National Register are the Rogers Little Theater and the Daisy Airgun Museum.
The University of Arkansas in Fayetteville is receiving Good Ink for one of its programs. The Creative Writing and Translation programs in the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences Department of English was recently ranked among the top programs in the United States by Poets and Writers magazine. In its 2013 MFA index published this week, the U of A ranked 39th among full residency Master of Fine Arts programs, and it ranked 8th in job placement for its graduates. Of 150 programs surveyed, the program also placed 16th in funding for current students and 18th in fellowship placement, a measure of how many graduates earned prestigious national fellowships over the past decade. The program also ranked 39th out of 160 in popularity based on the number of students who applied to the program last school year.
The University of Arkansas Fort Smith will have some extra money to fund its Upward Bound Math and Science program. The university announced last week that it will receive a $1.3 million grant from the Department of Education. The university will receive $260,400 in each of 5 years of the program, which helps strengthen the math and science skills of participating students. According to the college, the grant is designed to identify and provide services for individuals from disadvantaged backgrounds.
Also in Fort Smith news, city residents will be faced with a vote in November on mandating automated trash collection across the city. According to thecitywire.com, City Clerk Sherry Gard sent a letter Friday to Joel Culberson, the lead organizer of an effort to get the issue on the ballot, stating that his petition effort was certainly sufficient to be placed on the ballot. The issue will also make it to tonight's Board of Directors agenda. The petition certification comes after the board voted on August 23rd to implement the citywide automation, an about-face after months of split votes to continue implementation of the automated collection. Though the approval effectively made the petition efforts moot, Culberson reportedly says that the push for getting the issue on the ballot was not for nothing. If approved by voters, 5 board members will have to come to consensus to reverse the decision, as opposed to 4 votes if enacted solely by the board.
Arkansas Senator Mark Pryor, a Democrat, says his party is ready to make a case for re-election. He'll be attending the Democratic National Convention in North Carolina this week. He says the Republicans offered great emotional rhetoric at their convention last week in Florida, but Senator Pryor says the GOP has not offered solutions to the nation's problems.
I certainly always stand ready to work with Republicans in Washington and in Arkansas to try to find good solutions for the challenges we have in a country. And you take something like health care. If they talk about repeal and replace, if they have something that's better to replace it with, I'll vote for it in a heartbeat. But they won't put anything on paper. They love to have press conferences, and they love to blame the president, but they don't have any solutions of their own.
Breyer says he attended his first Democratic convention in 1976 when the party nominated Jimmy Carter for the presidency. The senator says he's looking forward to interacting with other Democrats from around the country when this year's convention starts tomorrow night.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals received mixed blessings over the holiday weekend. The good news, they won both games in Friday's doubleheader against the Arkansas Travelers, preventing a potential 7-game losing streak. The bad news, they lost the final 3 games of the regular season at home at Arvis Ballpark in Springdale. Yesterday, the Nats lost their final game to the Tulsa Drillers 4-7.
The Razorback soccer team recorded a loss this weekend. The Kennesaw State Owls defeated the Hogs 1-0 last night at Razorback Field. Kennesaw State scored the winning goal with just under 5 minutes to play. The Razorbacks will play again at home this week, hosting the number 1 Florida State team at 7 Sunday evening. The Razorback volleyball team played a couple of matches over the weekend. They defeated Central Michigan in 3 sets during the first match, pushing the team's season record to 6-0. But Saturday evening, the Hogs' luck changed. They lost to Michigan in 5 sets. The 6-1 volleyball team back in Fayetteville for its next match. They take on Oklahoma at 7 tonight in Barnhill.
Tonight, expect clear conditions with a low of 77 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley and a low of 68 degrees and a 20% chance of rain in northwest Arkansas. Tomorrow, we'll have partly cloudy skies with a high around 100 degrees. Chance of rain in northwest Arkansas is 30%, while chance of rain in the Arkansas River Valley is 20%. Tomorrow night, expect partly cloudy conditions with a 20% chance of rain and possibly a thunderstorm. The low in northwest Arkansas will be 66 degrees, while the low in the Arkansas River Valley will be around 79 degrees. Is Ozarks at Large. Do you speak Ozark English? Scholars say it's a distinct dialect rooted in Appalachia, tracing back to the British Isles. And like many endangered languages, it's fading. But as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, if you listen carefully, you can still hear Ozark English spoken.
Buster Austin is an Ozark native. He turns 100 in October. And when we spoke with him early this summer for a story about homesteading in Madison County, he told us when he was a boy growing up, he loved to climb a rock bluff on nearby Penitentiary Mountain.
I've clumb it where it's nearly as tall as the trees.
I've clumb it. That archaic usage is rare and precious to linguists studying regional dialects. Shiloh Museum of Ozark History's Susan Young, a fifth-generation Ozarker, studies on these things. She travels widely as outreach coordinator, delivering programs of all kinds, including on Ozark dialect. But when she's out in public, she's also perennially on the lookout for native speakers.
When I can hear somebody say, and I don't hear it very often, why, dinner was plum larping. All right, there are two things in there. Dinner was plum larping. Dinner being the noon meal. Dinner is the noon meal. Larrapin is an old, old word for delicious.
Ozark English, she says, is mostly lost on Ozark urban districts. But in rural places?
People that live out in the rural areas that are living on the same land that they've lived on for generations, and grandpa and grandma might still live across the field from them. The traditions, including the dialect, just hangs on longer.
Especially in Newton County, in Madison County, what some of the locals call Booger County.
There are two favorite words that I use in my Ozark dialect program for kids. One is booger. You know what a booger is? Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah, after they all come back from pretending to pick their nose, a booger is a ghost or a scary creature or a haint or a haunt.
Also, the double negative, which is schooled out of us.
There's not nobody that I can think of that knows these Ozarks any better than I do. I don't know. Not nobody. There ain't nobody. Yet double negatives are very, very common. And again, I don't know why. I can just tell you that when I hear it, oh, yeah, it's like, okay, my people.
And the ubiquitous y'all?
Now, I grew up with y'all, and I say that all the time. It's just a normal way of speaking. But the more I've listened and the more I've talked to people here in the Ozarks, Yuns is more historically accurate. Yuns better come and go with us. I hear people that still say that today. That's a real lovely sound to me, because I don't hear a lot of people that say Yuns, and when that's real Ozark right there, Yuns.
Her accent, she says, exemplifies the broader Highland Plateau dialect, distinct from the Arkansas River Valley and Delta. So where is she from exactly?
Fedvul, F-E-D-V-U-L. Now, let me say that the last thing I want to do, most of the programs that I get called upon to do have to do with traditional Ozark folkways. It's what people love to hear about, and that can be building a log cabin, quilting, moonshining, and the Ozark dialect. So all those things, moonshining and the Ozark dialect especially, are just dripping with our stereotype. You know, this accent that I have, people immediately think you're kind of dumb, like you're a hillbilly. I mean, it's not just my cross to bear. That's part of the Ozark stereotype, is the way we talk, or the Southern, the way we talk. Why? We must not have much book learning, or, you know, some of the wisest people I know sound like this.
But the thing is, Ozark English is rooted in Old English.
Travel writers and folklorists in the early 1900s especially made a big to-do about the Appalachians and the Ozarks having these remnants of an Anglo-Saxon seedbed, some of them would call it, and how you could go back in the hills of the Appalachians or in the Ozarks and find people talking the Elizabethan English, and that if you dropped William Shakespeare out of the sky and into this hill community, that he would be able to converse perfectly with the hill folk. And, well, that's a little over-romanticized, because we didn't come from England and go straight to the Appalachians or the Ozarks. We had a chance to mix in on the East Coast with Germanic people and Scandinavian people. We had African Americans here with us as well. So it's not a perfectly intact Elizabethan English, but there are remnants of it. And there are a lot of scholars today that kind of poo-poo that and say that would say to me, you're romanticizing this. But when I can pick out a word like salet, that is in Shakespeare. Shakespeare used the word salet. I can have a green salet. Well, I grew up here, and we're going to hunt for poke salet.
Whilst, reckon, ain't, and purchase, to get a grip or purchase on something, all Anglo-Saxon. Pioneering folklorist John Lomax and his son Alan traveled the Mid and Deep South collecting songs, stories, and oral histories. But Susan says the rugged and remote Ozarks have been overlooked by such scholars. That's why the work of early to mid-20th century regional folklorists Vance Randolph, his spouse U of A English professor Mary Celestia Parler, and folklife writer Otto Ernest Rayburn is highly valued. Randolph in particular was keenly interested in the Ozark Highlands dialect, publishing a number of books which continue to sell to this day.
When Randolph was studying the Ozark folks, he purposely sought out the oldest members of a community that lived the furthest back in the hills, because he wanted to get those remnants of the old ways. He didn't go to the Chamber of Commerce and talk to the Chamber of Commerce president in Springfield, Missouri. He went to the folks back in the hills and hollers. So I think he had a fair... Certainly his research is unparalleled as far as a regional focus on folkways of people. I also think, though, he knew how to sell books, and several of his books open up in the introduction with saying the Ozarks are the most deliberately unprogressive. The Ozark people are the most deliberately unprogressive people in the United States. And he knew that people had this, we had this yearning. We all have this yearning, I think, to go back to a simpler way of life, however you define that. And for so much of us, the American simpler way of life, historically, you think of the log cabin pioneers.
But it's Vance Randolph's spouse, Mary Celestia Parler, who's credited for being the most prolific Arkansas folklore researcher and recordist. courtesy of the Mary Celestia Parlor Collection at Special Collections at the U of A in Fayetteville. Here's a 1951 recording of Mary High Briscoe, a rural Carroll County native herbalist and folk singer at the age of 76, talking about her grandpap being bewitched by 9 black cats.
And Grandma had gone to bed, and every night they'd come in and dance around. 9 black cats would come and dance around the floor. And it was just a new house. And so he fixed him a chinking to fit that hole that they'd come in at every night. Here they come in dancing around. And before he could get that chunk in to save his neck, every one of them had gone out.
Now note the difference between Mary Briscoe, who lived close to Missouri, and this tape of Ivy Trail, archived in the Library of Congress American Folklife Center, recorded by Vance Randolph in 1942 in Farmington. Ivy's reading a letter she'd written to President Theodore Roosevelt requesting more medical services for her people.
There's some that says people can't make a living in the hills and ought to move out, but our mountain people are happy and they can raise stuff to eat and they have lots of wood all around and plenty of pasture and they get along all right and they didn't kill them to be cooped up in town and they don't ask no odds of nobody if it just wasn't for when sickness hits and things like that, why they can't get a doctor.
Other recordings of native Ozark English speakers reveal words like born, once, and twiced, and a coming and a going. Again, Susan Young.
And I still hear that one quite a bit with the older folks in the rural areas.
What it does is it's almost a verb.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of, I don't know if it's an extra emphasis, not necessarily.
Linguists measuring cognate matrices, one word across cultures, for example, mom, have a new theory that Indo-European languages can be traced to Anatolian culture, that's present-day Turkey. But given our cultural amalgamation, they say, by the end of the 21st century, the world will have lost as many as 7,000 languages. So the next time you hear someone speaking Ozark English, you ought to sit and listen for a spell, says fifth-generation Ozarks native Susan Young.
When you go to visit, like you're going on a Sunday afternoon, you're having dinner, you're having a noon meal with your old relatives, you sit and visit, and you might stay there all day. And then when you're done, you say, well, we better go, and they'll say, well, you might as well stay a while longer. You might as well stay more. And then your response is, well, you might as well come. You better come go with us. It's a way of saying goodbye. The people that are leaving will say, well, you better come go with us, while the people that are staying will say, well, you better stay more. So it's just a way of saying goodbye. And that's a lovely, lovely Ozark tradition.
Now, we plumb forgot at the end of our interview with Susan Young to ask her about the word drought, much discussed this summer on the Ozarks Plateau, because some tend to say the word drouth. Why is that? A search of the Cambridge History of English Language found the archaic usage, drouth, D-R-U-G-A-T-H, the Anglo-Saxon word for dryness. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more about Ozark history and culture, you can visit shilohmuseum.org.
Independent researcher Tom Duggan will discuss the life of timber magnate and land speculator Roscoe C. Hobbs September 19th at noon at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History. Born in Bentonville in 1881, Hobbs made his fortune in the harvest of timber and the manufacturing of railroad ties, and today that land is the Hobbs State Park Conservation Area near Rogers. The Shiloh Museum is located at the corner of Johnson and Main in downtown Springdale. For more information, 479-750-8165.
It is the campaign season. Bentonville Public Schools will host a PTO candidate forum Thursday from 5:30 until 7 p.m. at Bentonville High School's Lecture Hall. Candidates will have the opportunity to express their views on issues facing the school district. The community is invited. Don't forget school board's elections September 18th. For early voting and polling information, you can go to BentonvilleK12.org. BentonvilleK12.org.
This week in This American Life, fear of sleep. An apartment with so many cockroaches that in the middle of the night, they crawl into the family's ears. A woman whose husband tries to strangle her in his sleep while he is actually asleep. After that, it's hard to go to bed without worrying. And other stories of people scared to fall asleep this week.
This American Life, Saturday mornings at 6 and Sunday mornings at 10 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Voters will begin heading to the polls, at least those who opt for early voting, in just under 7 weeks. There are still some final modifications to the ballot that may or may not be required before then. Two casino-related amendments are in separate states of legal limbo, and courts will decide if voters will be able to see those measures. We do know that a question involving medicinal marijuana will be on the ballot, and the proposed increase of the severance tax on natural gas will not. Recently, Roby Brock from TalkBusiness.net discussed the ballot with Steve Bronner, political columnist for Stevens Media.
Let's begin with Sheffield Nelson's severance tax proposal. This is something that he had been trying to get on the ballot for the better part of the last 6 to 8 months. There was an army of business interests that were going to line up against this thing. Do you think it even had a snowball's chance to begin with?
Not much. To get on the ballot, you have to have a bunch of signatures, and to have a bunch of signatures, you have to have an army. And who is the army that is going to line up against the natural gas industry right now? It's hard to find people, so he had to hire some outfit to do it for him, and they didn't do a very good and possibly didn't do a legal job of clicking those signatures.
Yeah, a lot of invalid signatures that were turned in on that behalf, and I think that was what's discouraged him, wouldn't you say, in terms of trying to meet the 30-day extension that he got?
He basically gave it up.
Let's talk, too, about medical marijuana. We polled this issue earlier, back in July, found that the electorate is pretty evenly split on this. 47% support medical marijuana in Arkansas, 46% oppose medical marijuana. Before we get to some of the political alignment with that, did those numbers surprise you?
A little. But this doesn't line up along the usual pro-drug, anti-drug, it's pro-drug, but along the usual lines, because it's going to be harder for the group that's against this, those that are against this, to kind of paint it as something that's against the war on drugs, because there's a compassion into this, mm-hmm. and so it's going to be a difficult case for them to make.
Now, the group that is supporting this is called Arkansans for Compassionate Care, and they're obviously, like you say, they're going to be supporting this more compassion-oriented people that have medical conditions that need this type of pain relief that they claim medical marijuana provides for them. Who opposes this?
Church groups and law enforcement. And they will have to counter the photo of a person who has cancer saying, this is what helped me, with the argument that this is a Trojan horse to bring in more legalized marijuana. They will say that medical marijuana has never been proven to be a successful way to help people treat or fight cancer or other diseases. It will be a difficult task for both sides. Anytime it's 50-50 going into, you just don't know who's going to win.
Yeah, and it's a pretty small undecided group too, which I found kind of surprising as well, that only like 7% of those that we polled actually don't have an opinion on this. Do you think that that's maybe because there's been a pretty big national discussion about this and other states have adopted this? Why do you think that there might be so much decision already made on this?
Because we've already decided on everything. Polls are showing that there's like a 3% undecided rate on the presidential election. The electorate, more than ever in its history, has made up its mind on virtually everything, and this is months before the election. I think that the combination of the internet, 24-hour news shows, we basically, if you are an interested voter, you know where you stand on a whole lot of issues, and I think medical marijuana is one of them.
And that's good for people like us in the news business, is it not? Yeah. All right, let's talk about casinos. This has been one of the more convoluted things that we've seen over this course of the last couple of weeks. Nancy Todd, professional poker player, has brought her potential constitutional amendment in here. She's headed to the Supreme Court to get her ballot title ruled sufficient. Maybe we explain a little bit of what the ballot title is and then how it's the short description of what the proposal actually does and why that has been such a kind of complicated issue for her.
Well, it wouldn't be an election season in Arkansas if we didn't have an out-of-state interest trying to pass an unregulated casino monopoly that's going to end up going to the Supreme Court. I mean, it happens almost every single election season. She wants to have a constitutional monopoly to have casinos in four counties. That's a problem for, first of all, because casinos are now illegal in Arkansas, supposedly.
Supposedly.
That's a problem for Oaklawn and Southland, which have casinos, even though they don't call them that. I've been in the one once at Oaklawn. It's a casino. Right now they're hosting the Arkansas Poker Players Championship. Southland calls itself Southland Gaming and Racing, gaming first. So we have casinos in Arkansas, and they're concerned, rightly, that if this passes, their casinos may be constitutionally gone.
Right.
And if that happens, we can say goodbye to Southland. Southland can't compete with that. Oaklawn, who knows? I mean, it's a long, storied history. But if we if this passes, then Southland is a big dirt track.
If she's successful in addressing her concerns, I would suggest that one of the things that may happen right now, she's being challenged just on the ballot title not being sufficient to explain to voters that it could do away with Oaklawn and Southland's electronic games of skill that they host in their casinos. If she's she's successful in getting that obstacle cleared, then she might face from the opposition group that's opposed to her the fact that she collected these 130,000 signatures using the old ballot title. That's complicated for her as well, is it not?
How could it not be? They collected the signatures based on this is what the ballot issue is, then she's going to change it after the signatures are already turned in. I don't see how it works, but we'll wait and see.
Well, we have polled this as well. We found only 28% of Arkansans support this proposal. 66% are opposed to it. There's another casino proposal that could also make it to the ballot. It's undergoing a legal challenge as well right now. Right now, I think it actually is qualified to be on the actual ballots that'll get printed, but they still have to work some stuff out. It's Michael Wasserman, Texas Businessman's casino proposal. What happens if they get on the ballot and they both pass? What happens?
Well, I think it's dead. Because while it did technically have enough signatures, the Secretary of State has not certified those signatures. And it barely had enough. So we have to wait and see. If it does get on the ballot, then the one that gets if they both won, the one that gets the most votes wins.
Steve Bronner is a political columnist with Stevens Media. He discussed the November election with Roby Brock from our content partner, TalkBusiness.net. Support for TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. Plus, Verizon offering a wide selection of productivity-enhancing tablets for small business, including the Apple iPad. More information at a Verizon communications store near you or online at VZW.com/small business. And CEG Partners, using empirical data to better understand your customers' experiences and their loyalties. More information at CEGPartners.com.
Ahead on Ozarks, time has been no friend of Johnny Cash's boyhood home in Dyess, Arkansas. But Arkansas State University is restoring the one-time home of the musical icon. That story in about 3 minutes on Ozarks at Large.
It's Tuesday, September 4th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
We're happy to welcome back Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
It's nice to be back. It's not as much fun by phone.
Yeah, no, it's better when you're here in person.
Happy to be here. So tonight, if you go to UAFS in Fort Smith, you should go and laugh at your teachers.
The faculty follies are tonight.
Faculty follies and serious stuff featuring the music faculty. 7:30 at UAFS at 2nd Street. In Fort Smith.
That's 2nd Street Live, right there on 2nd Street.
And it's free.
So you just go in.
Go in and giggle at people you know.
That's awesome.
Then plan ahead and you can come giggle at Gridiron here in a month or so.
Right. Do you know anything about what's on tap for tonight in the program?
Okay. I don't know a clue. It'll be interesting. And here's we try to tell you something that's going on in the area every week. If you're too excited to wait to see the production War Horse, which comes to the Walton Arts Center in May, you can get a sneak peek soon in Dallas. The musical's about a boy and his horse in World War I era England, and it will be at the Winspear Opera House September 12th through the 23rd. Tickets start at $30 at attpack.org.
And much like I've heard said about Noises Off, what I've heard about War Horse is if you saw the movie, don't worry, plays better.
I was going to wait for the play.
Okay.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. An effort to restore the boyhood home of Johnny Cash continues in the Arkansas Delta town of Dice. A fundraising concert last fall raised more than $300,000 for the project, and another such concert is scheduled for this autumn with performers including Willie Nelson, Roseanne Cash, and the Civil Wars. Michael Hiblin with our partner station KUAR in Little Rock recently talked with the woman overseeing the restoration project, Dr. Ruth Hawkins. She's the head of the Arkansas Heritage Sites Program at Arkansas State University, the school that now owns the property.
We have made a lot of progress on the house. The house has now been set back on its foundation. It was interesting. The biggest part of the work that we had to do was work that nobody will ever see, and that is the soil there in Dice is it's gumbo soil, which means it moves and rolls, and the houses in Dice are very unlevel because the ground moves and shifts so much. So to prevent that from happening in the future, we had to dig a pit 7 feet deep, the entire area that the house occupied, and we removed all that gumbo soil, and then we packed it with good soil, and then dug a pit for a foundation around the house about 2 feet wide and poured a concrete foundation, and then covered that with soil so that people couldn't see this massive concrete foundation, and set the original concrete piers back on that foundation, then move the house back. So now we don't think that house is going anywhere. We think it's going to be pretty sturdy for a long time. But we have now everything that was added since the Cash family left the house has all been torn out. It's things that were removed have pretty much been put back. We have stripped when the Cashes lived there. There was no paint on the walls. They were the bare wood panels, and so the walls have now been stripped. We are working on getting ready to reinstall all of the windows. We did. The original windows had disappeared, so we had to have reproduction windows made, which we are getting ready to install, and also are getting ready to install the wood shingle roof again.
You having a lot of people still coming by as the work progresses?
Oh, yes, that's been really interesting. And we put a message box out on the fence just because we knew we had so many people coming by. And we have invited people to leave their messages. And it's really great to go by there once a week or so and pick up the messages. They're from all over. They're from people in Wales and Norway and Japan and sometimes they've left checks in the message box, and so it's really been a great thing. I guess one of the really exciting things for me as well has been working with Tommy Cash and Joanne Cash, who are Johnny's younger brother and sister. And, of course, they grew up in the house as well. We call it the Johnny Cash House, but it was also the Joanne Cash and the Tommy Cash House. And they have phenomenal memories, and they remember every stick of furniture in the house. They remember who sat where at the dinner table and so forth. So they have been describing the furniture to us, and we have been working with a virtual builder named David Hollywood who builds in a program called Second Life. He actually lives in Australia, but we send him the descriptions. We email him the descriptions of the furniture. He builds them in this virtual world, and he's built a virtual replica of the house. So he puts the furniture in the proper room and in the proper space. And then we take pictures of it, and we send it to Joanne and Tommy and say, is this what it looked like? And they'll say, well, the sofa was a little more scuffed up than that, or the piano was sitting here, not there, or the pot-bellied stove was a little rounder than that. And so as a result, we're able to get a really good sense of how the house was furnished. And once we feel confident that we know exactly what it looked like, then we'll probably take Joanne Cash out on a shopping trip to some antique shops and so forth to help us find all of these replica pieces.
Yeah. How amazing is it that this house actually still exists?
Well, it's phenomenal because there are probably, of the 500 houses that were built there, there's maybe only a couple of dozen of them left. And most of the ones that are left are actually in town, not out, you know, in the on the actual farmland. Most of the houses that were on farmland have been torn down just because farming has gone so large scale that you obviously want to be able to farm every inch of it. So the fact that that the house remains, I suppose that people have recognized all along that it was the Johnny Cash home and that maybe it shouldn't be torn down. Otherwise, there's not really any reason for it still being there.
Yeah, but it was never kept necessarily.
It was never kept up. It was again in terrible shape, primarily because, as I said, all of those houses that were built around that time were built with just the concrete piers as the foundation. And so as the ground shifted and moved, they all got lopsided and all a kilter, and so they didn't look good from the outside. And so we're fortunate that it was at least still there.
Yeah, well, it seems like a lot of Johnny Cash fans have gotten behind this project. I know the dedication ceremony in February, the Dyess Community Center was packed, and at the event in Jonesboro last August,
right,
8,000 people sold out there at the Convocation Center at ASU. So, yeah, have y'all been getting a lot of fan support?
We have, and of course, we have our next benefit concert is scheduled for October 5th in Jonesboro at the Convocation Center. We will have Roseanne Cash coming back for that, but we will also have on the lineup, we will have Willie Nelson, who was not able to come the last time. We will have Dierks Bentley, who appeals to a younger audience, which will be great. And then we have a great group, the Civil Wars. And so we think that we'll have another sellout crowd. And of course, the concert last year, we cleared about $300,000. And so our plan is to generate enough funds from this next concert that we can finish the restoration. And of course, once we restore the house itself and furnish it, we also plan to do all of the outbuildings that were there, the outhouse itself and the smokehouse and the chicken coop and the barn and all of those buildings that were part of the farmstead.
And are you on track to, believe it was June of next year, that y'all are hoping to at least open the house itself?
That's what we're hoping. And, of course, Arkansas State University also owns the administration building and the theater building that are in the town itself. And we're making great progress on the administration building. We hope to have the administration building finished enough that we can have some exhibits there available. We do hope by next June to have the house open. We won't have all of the outbuildings finished yet, but hopefully we'll have something that people can go into the house and get a great tour.
Well, it's good to see the fan support as well as the family. For me, in February, being there, talking with Tommy Cash and Joanne Cash and Yates and Roseanne Cash, who have practically been in love with for 25 years.
Well, and you know, it's been really interesting that all of Johnny Cash's children have bought into this. And so every week we get an email from Roseanne or from Kathy or Cindy or Tara, you know, all of his daughters saying, oh, I was going through my dad's stuff or my mom's stuff and I found this. And they send us things that Johnny has written about Dyess. Just last week, Roseanne sent me something that her dad had written in a letter to her mom about how much he loved Dyess and that every inch of that town had special meaning for him. So it's really great that the family has bought in and are sharing all these things with us.
Dr. Ruth Hawkins is the executive director of the Arkansas Heritage Sites Program at Arkansas State University. The school is overseeing the project to restore Johnny Cash's boyhood home in Dyess, Arkansas. She talked about the work with Michael Hiblin from our partner station KUAR in Little Rock.
SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, begins its 2012-2013 season Sunday, September 16th at 3 at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. The opening concert will include Wagner's Tannhauser Overture, Barber's Violin Concerto featuring soloist Winona Fifield, and Brahms Symphony No. 2. Tickets available at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org.
Imagine a work of art produced in limited runs, which you can place on your wall and have an Arkansas connection and might be otherwise unknown to the general population. Brooks Tipton is helping produce such work. Motivated by the do-it-yourself or DIY ethic, the musician figured out how to have a screen printing business that allows him to have a flexible schedule. Now he's producing the AR Art Project that uses state-based artists' works. Ozarks at Large's Katie Henriksen recently called him to ask about his unconventional business plan.
I really began out of necessity years ago. I'd worked a lot of odd jobs for years and I always knew I wanted to own my own business eventually. And so really any job that I worked at, I tried to kind of take something from it, you know, whether I was delivering flowers or working at Whole Foods as a cashier. And then eventually I worked construction because I played in bands and I toured a lot. So with touring, I had to find something that was flexible, someone that would let me come and go. And there was this guy that he's amazing at construction, and I'm just like a little band dude, kind of, you know. I wasn't really born to do that sort of thing, but I was always interested. I wanted to know how it worked from beginning to end to build a house or, you know, just general maintenance even. So eventually the job market got really bad, slowed down, and he wasn't able to have me work as much, and I needed to make some money. So a friend of mine taught me how to screen print shirts so that we could screen print our own shirts for my band Bear Colony at the time. And so after learning how to do like the super DIY style of printing, one day I realized there was potential for me to actually do that for a living.
And why don't you go ahead and explain like the very, for someone who doesn't know anything about screen printing, and you started off with a very DIY process. Let's talk about the very rudimentary screen printing techniques and what they are and what is a screen print?
Well, pretty good question. I'm still trying to figure that out myself. I learned the kind of art student way of doing things, which is you've got a screen, usually with a wooden or metal frame, and you pull mesh over that frame and pull it to a certain tension, really tight. And so it's kind of like a silky mesh, very fine mesh, and you cover it or coat it rather with a thin layer of photo emulsion, and you take a transparency, like a positive of an image, and you put light against it to block out the image itself from the screen, and then you wash that. I know this sounds pretty, this is like pretty technical, but and then you wash that out, whatever was exposed, and then you can actually pull ink through that positive space. Seeing it done is probably, this is definitely one of those things that you kind of need to see it done, and then you go, oh, that's not as magical or mysterious as I thought.
Let's talk about the specific project that you've just started, the AR Art, in which you pick a different Arkansas artist each month to do limited edition screen prints. Let's talk a little bit about that project and why you started that.
It's something I've always been interested in since I started. I always wanted to continue finding great artists, mainly because I'm not an artist like that myself. But I feel like I know good art when I see it, or at least what I think is good art. And I want to always, I just want to keep being challenged with screen printing, those kinds of things. And Arkansas is just full of amazing, talented people. So there was enough people around town. I've kind of slowed down with touring recently, kind of chilling out a little bit in my old age of 30. And You know, I'm spending more time at home and kind of just getting a little more involved in the community. And my friend Vince, who sings for that band Bear Colony, is a great artist himself, and he's actually going to be my artist for September. And he suggested a while back that I should do a series, and that kind of got me off my butt to do it. And so I started it last month, and each month I'll do a limited run, as he said, of about 50 posters, two designs, something like that, and then they'll remain for sale until they're gone. Through my future website, which will be up in a month, or my Tumblr page. So, you know, I feel like I didn't feel like anyone else is really doing that. These artists need their artwork out there, and a lot of artists are kind of, you know, hermit-like, and they don't they produce beautiful things, but they're not really typically the social types, you know, that get out and will spread the word. So a lot of people will never see their work, and I just kind of want to be one little person out there helping with that.
Sure. And so how do you find those people, since you say they're hermits? How are you able to find that kind of artist that's maybe needing to be recognized but isn't?
Well, I'm sure there's a lot that I won't find, unfortunately. I'm, you know, as I said, I've played in bands and been surrounded kind of with the art community for years. And Arkansas is a small world a little bit, you know, and I feel like through that I've kind of met a lot of local artists and in Little Rock and Fayetteville and even some of the other towns around here. And that's kind of how it's going. Since this has happened, like people are doing write-ups like you or interviews, that's helping get the word out as well, so people can contact me if they're interested. And I'd like to take a look at their work and see if it would kind of fit the vibe, you know, of what I'm trying to do.
And let's talk about specifically about Arkansas artists. And it doesn't have to be visual. We can talk music since you're also involved in music. And the DIY scene in Arkansas, what is it like?
You know, I feel like places, well, I've traveled all over the world, you know, and I feel like everywhere has amazing artists and in their own right, you know, but I feel like the places that have the most special music to me and the most special art is usually a place that kind of maybe struggles a little more, maybe has less things to do, you know. I think a lot of kids at an early age in a place like Arkansas feel kind of this, you know, like a feeling of just, you know, not being able to put their talents into places like there's not as many like things to go out and do, or you know, it's not like a big city where you're just overly, what's the word? I've been searching for this one word now
for
about a minute.
Overstimulated and
Stimulated. Yeah. So you have to find a way to kind of stimulate yourself. And I think Arkansas is a wonderful place for that and a great example of that. Not just with art, but, you know, education as well.
To find out more about Brooks Tipton's Electric Ghost screen printing business as well as its AR art series, you can go to electricghostprinting.tumblr.com. That's T-U-M-B-L-R. He also has a Facebook page and Instagram. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Katie Henriksen.
And there is more from their conversation and audio extra at ozarksatlarge.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 4th of September, 2012. It was on this day in 1998 that Google was incorporated, the brainchild of two PhD students at Stanford, Larry Page and Sergey Brin, who designed a search engine that was different from the others. Instead of giving you results based on how many times your search term appeared on a web page, they created software that would figure out how many times each relevant website was linked to from other relevant websites and sorted those and then laid them out for you on a very clear, simple screen. In June of 2006, Google was added to the Oxford English Dictionary as a verb. It's the birthday of Richard Wright, born on a plantation near Natchez, Mississippi, 1908, came north, became a writer, author of the novel Native Son, came out in 1940, about a black man, Bigger Thomas, gets a job as a chauffeur for a beautiful young white woman, accidentally kills her. A huge bestseller when it came out, made into a Broadway play, now required reading at many high schools. This day in 1666 was the most destructive day of the Great Fire of London, which had begun a few days before, people scurrying to get their possessions out of the path of the fire. And the diarist Samuel Pepys wrote about the chaos and confusion in the streets, the people running, pushing carts full of belongings, the fire coming on in the narrow streets with infinite fury. He wrote, "I saw how horridly the sky looks all on a fire in the night was enough to put us out of our wits, and indeed it was extremely dreadful, for it looks just as if it was at us and the whole heaven on fire. I, after supper, walked in the dark down to Tower Street, and there saw it all on fire, at the Trinity House on that side and the Dolphin Tavern on this side, which was very near us, and the fire with extraordinary vehemence." The system of firefighting basically was to demolish houses in the path of the fire, hoping to create a fire break. The following day, September the 5th, the Great Fire was officially over, and it all started on September the 2nd when the King's Baker in Putting Lane had neglected to turn the ovens off all the way. London was a city of 80,000 people, and historians estimate that the Great Fire destroyed the homes of 70,000 of them, as well as almost 90 churches, all the official buildings. St. Paul's Cathedral was burned, and all of medieval London within the old Roman city wall. Here's a poem for today by W.S. Merwin, entitled The Highway. It seems too enormous just for a man to be walking on, as if it and the empty day were all there is, and a little dog trotting in time with the heat waves off near the horizon, seeming never to get any farther. The sun and everything are stuck in the same places, and the ditch is the same all the time, full of every kind of bone, while the empty air keeps humming that sound it has memorized of things going past. And the signs, with huge heads and starved bodies, doing dances in the heat, and the others big as houses, all promise, but with nothing inside and only one wall, tell of other places where you can eat, drink, get a bath, lie on a bed, listening to music, and be safe. If you look around, you see it is just the same the other way going back, and farther now to where you came from, probably, than to places you can reach by going on. The Highway by W.S. Merwin, from the first four books of poems published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, produced by Nick Vedder, written by Betsy Alistair. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Dyer.
Dyer, just off of I-40.
Mm-hmm.
South of Fort Smith?
South
and east? South and west?
North and east. It's other near than, Alma.
Other than the two directions I picked, I was right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I am directionally challenged. This is a well-known fact.
Mm-hmm.
You and I back together tomorrow
for
a brand new edition of Ozarks. I saw Noises off this weekend,
uh-huh.
As did you.
Yeah, we can talk about that tomorrow.
Yes, because we're out of time now.
All right. Have a good day.